You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. Celebrate Canada's 150th and treat yourself to a brand new Silverado. 20% off MSRP cash credit on select vehicles right now at Lakewood Chev.
Continue on with Analytics Week, and very happy to have on the show a gentleman who, in his own words, considers himself an analytics graybeard. Has been interested in statistics ever since he was 12 years old and started watching hockey. And in the 1990s, got really more into his goal was to become more in-depth to qualify the value of a player's into a single number, and has been searching after that ever since. And we found out yesterday he did come up with a number. And we're going to explain how, he's going to explain to us how he came up with that number. Tom Awad joins us. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on the show, Jason.
Hey, I appreciate you having us on. Yesterday we had Rob Volman on the show, and of course you've teamed up with Rob, and you guys have written some great books on hockey and analytics and statistics, and you know we look forward to the new ones that people haven't read yet. But yesterday was a number I'd never heard before, and he said you did a lot of research collecting data over the years to come up with, of all the data, goals, statistics, analytics, basically to formulate that you can quantify up to about 36% of a team's success. So can we kind of go back to what did you put into this to come up with that number? And I like the word you use, quantify up to 36%.
Yeah. So basically what I was trying to do is I was trying to say, okay, given everything that I know about a team, the only statistics that are of any use are statistics that have predicted value. Lots of people like to pull on numbers and say this number, you know, says how good a team is or how good a player is. The only numbers that have any value are numbers that are going to tell you who's going to win more their next game. So I tried looking at team statistics, and I tried seeing which statistics could predict how much a team would win in the future. And instead of going out with a preconceived notions, I tried everything. I tried, you know, goal differential, shot differential, Corsi, Fenwick, penalties, power play goals, shorthanded goals, everything other side. I even tried, you know, shootout wins just to see, you know, how that would correlate with everything. And I came up with about, you know, the four or five numbers that could predict about 36% of a team's future success and no more. And no matter what I threw at the model, I couldn't end up predicting any more than that.
Was that expected? Like, did you think that was a successful with 36%? Do you expect more or less before you ran it?
I was hoping for a little more, so I could look at it another way. We know that given the parity of the NHL as it is now, you can calculate that about 38-39% of a team's success over a season is luck. So that leaves about 61% to be predicted. I would have liked to be able to predict, you know, the majority of that 61%. 36 is about, you know, like three-fifths of that, so that's not bad. But theoretically, you should be able to get all 61% of that. So it's possible that somebody out there smarter than me would be able to get better. But 36 is not bad.
Now, how did you come up with the luck percentage of 38 to 39?
Yeah, so that's just some basic math. I mean, for example, if I give you two teams that are exactly the same strength, we all agree that on any given night, not every game between them is going to end up in a tie, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes Team A will win, sometimes Team B will win. So if you look at the distribution of goals in the NHL and the distribution of teams and things like that, you can calculate that given the strength of NHL teams as they are now, about 39% of the luck over a whole season, you know, by doing silly math stuff, Poisson distribution, stuff like that. But you can calculate, it's pretty easy to prove that about 38-39% of it is luck. And other people have done these numbers and come up to about the same result as me.
Okay, and injuries, is injuries under the equation of luck? I assume it is.
Yes, it would be. I mean, injuries that are non-predictable, because there are some players that are more fragile than others, right? So if you have a player who's knowingly fragile, if you've got a Marian Gaborik, for example, anytime he gets an injury and you say, oh, it's bad luck, well, you know, over time, it's not all of those are luck. But yes, free like one-time injuries, which many of them are, can be chalked up to luck.
You know, you mix in the injuries, which definitely affects the team's chance of success. Do you account for in this model the travel and fatigue?
On an individual basis, I did not. Although I was comparing same teams year over year, and same teams tend to have the same type of travel schedule year over year. You know, so for example, yes, you know, like the Western California teams are well known to have a rougher travel schedule, than the East Coast teams. But that's true for every season.
Tom Edwa joins us discussing hockey analytics. Now, you mentioned 36%, and you were hoping it would be more. As, analytics and statistics, and they start tracking more things, what would have to be tracked now to fill in that other 25% to get it up to 61%? What do you think is the next step in analytics to increase that number?
So one of the big ones, and I think a lot of people have spoken about shot quality, one of the big variables that's hard to predict year over year is shooting percentage. And we do know that shooting percentage over a single season, there's a lot of luck involved there. But we also know that shooting percentage and save percentage over multiple seasons, there are trends that draw themselves. I mean, I calculated that, for example, lots of people say shooting percentage is random, except if you look at the Washington Capitals over the last decade, they've scored 200 more goals than just, random shooting percentage would predict. So at once you're 200 goals, that's not random anymore. That's true skill. So the question is, how could we best measure this to say, oh, yes, these players, instead of shooting 9% in a season, they'll actually shoot 11% or something like that. Right now, it's hard for us to predict that other than by reputation. But if we could get, better zone of, for example, where do these players take their shots? Are there certain setups that lead to that? Do they have a higher, shot velocity, things like that? Do they have a higher accuracy in terms of where they get their shot on net? Things like that. That might be able to help us a little bit.
And even within that, I mean, just understanding trends. Like, if a guy is having a tough time scoring goals, probably shooting from the perimeter is not going to help because he's not feeling it. Sometimes you got to go back to the front of the net and just kind of get an ugly one in there. And I mean, that's part of the trend, too, that you have to work in there. I'm assuming that's difficult to put a number on.
It is. It is. I mean, often lots of players have a certain style, right? You've got the net crashers, the Wayne Simmonds or guys like that, and they'll tend to have percentages that are in line with that kind of stuff. You've also got other players, defensemen, for example, who will they have good shots, but because they tend to shoot from just inside the blue line, obviously there's not that many goals that come out of that, but it does end up producing good rebounds, stuff like that. So yes, all of these things. I mean, one of the statistics that people have started tracking is goals off of passes. They've noticed that for a given shot location, a goal that comes off a pass, especially a pass that goes from left to right in front of the goaltender, are much more likely to score. So it would be interesting to know, for example, a team like, I come back to Washington, they're not the only ones, but they're a good example. Do they create more opportunities like that? Does having a quality pass to a playmaker like Backstrom tend to lead to more shots where the goaltender is unprepared, things like that? Those would be things that would be interesting to know.
Now, does left to right create more goals? Because most goalies, catch with their left hand rather than left to right passes?
I don't think it's specifically left to, I mean, it's left to right or right to left.
Oh, okay.
I think it's more that you have the goaltender has to reposition himself. The lateral movement that you're forcing on the goaltender, in addition to preparing for the shot, just gives you a better chance of scoring.
Yeah, it's unsettling, right? When you're defending too, and a guy makes a pass from the left side to the right side or right to left, you have to readjust to that as well. And that gives, I think, the shooter space and, more importantly, the space, time to get a shot
space
off.
Space and time, exactly.
And that's what I want to ask you about you next. I mean, I've been saying this for years. The problem, but if you want more scoring, you got to give guys more time. And have you seen it? You've been watching Cincinnati's and you've been following the numbers very closely. Do you feel that that is a true statement, that there's less time for players to make plays and, more importantly, the least of goals, get those shots off?
There certainly is. And time and space sort of go together, right?
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
If your defender is very close in space, well, that limits the amount of time that you'll have to set yourself up. So obviously that is true. Teams have gotten very good at, defensive positioning, over the last 20 years. I mean, you look at videos from, the late 80s or the early 90s. You had a lot more just, rushes and two-on-ones and things like that, and just, more sloppy positioning. And then Jacques Lemaire came along and produced the trap. And a lot of teams are playing now, I wouldn't say trap, but, those types of positionally related defenses where you try and force the other team to dump in the puck and stuff like that. Goals at even strength off, nice, pretty pass plays are fairly rare these days.
Tom Awad joins us, analytics graybeard, author, co-author with Rob Vollman on numerous analytics book. Now, you've been covering statistics when you started out as 12 and then obviously advanced into even more deep into the analytics side. Tom, and I find a lot of statisticians when I talk to them over time, you know, they've changed their opinion or they, you know, they found something new and all of a sudden they're like, okay, you know what, maybe that's a little bit obsolete compared to what I thought about it maybe in the 90s or the 2000s or maybe even in 2013. What analytics that you have tracked have you changed your opinion on over time?
Certainly plus minus. I used to use plus minus as a relatively, I used to think it was an okay-ish defensive proxy, mostly because I've always been I'm a guy who likes history and large data sets and things like that.
Okay.
So I would look at the 70s and 80s, and the players who had amazing plus-minuses, you know, tend to be very good either two-way or defensive players, either excellent, you know, offensive players or, you know, very good defensemen. You think of the Rod Langways, you think of the Larry Robinsons, things like that. And these players had, you know, incredible plus-minuses. You know, and I figured that had value. But what's happened over the last, you know, again, two decades is that as parity has set in, plus minus over a single season is almost entirely random. And indeed, you've seen this where a player gets, you know, the best plus minus of the season, you know, 1 year, and the next year he's minus three. So you wonder, I mean, is it just the player who crashed or, you know, did the plus minus never really mean anything in the first place? So while I think it still has some historical value, I don't think in terms of looking at current seasons, plus minus has that much value.
Is Corsi similar to that in a sense?
Yes and no. Corsi is much more representative of what's actually taking place on the ice while a player is there. The problem is that Corsi, it has a lot of value at a team level or even at a player plus teammate level,
yeah.
But it doesn't have much value at a player level if you're not adjusting for it. Most of a player's Corsi is affected by who are his line mates and what situation does that player play in. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, because you're basically saying when you say adjusted, you're adjusting like who's he playing with, what's the situations, and probably who he's playing against most notably?
Exactly. So those are the three main factors. Who he's playing against changes a lot, but it's less important in the grand scheme of things because certain players are always put, say, when the faceoff, you know, there's a faceoff in their zone because they're defensive specialists. So that's fine. But obviously, if you're always starting the faceoff in your zone, there's going to be a lot more shots on your net than on the opposing net. That's just how hockey works, right? And similarly, if you're always playing with, I don't know, Anshay Kopitar is a good example of that. You know, a great, great two-way player, or Jonathan Toews. Well, obviously, these guys are gonna pull up your Corsi. So, I mean, if I just look at your Corsi individually, you'll look like a superstar. But in fact, you're riding on the coattails of somebody else.
And Tom, one other stat or acronym that you came up with is GVT. And for any of our baseball people, it's kind of hockey's equivalent to WAR. So, can you explain what GVT is in hockey terms to our listeners?
Yeah, so GVT is I'd say by today's standards, an archaic statistic that I developed to try and quantify the value of all NHL players into a single stat. And the way I do that is by measuring their value in goals. So GVT means goals versus threshold, which is another way of saying versus replacement level. I was trying to quantify how many goals is a certain player worth as compared to replacement level, which is, you know, the type of player that you could easily get, you know, a fifth line player, shall we say. So GVT is measured by looking at a player's offensive scoring totals versus what a replacement player would score. So for forwards or defensemen, for example, the thresholds are different because forwards are expected to get more points than defensemen. It was calculated using the defensive factor of GVT was calculated. Again, this is an old statistic, so it used the old stats that I had access to, which was basically amount of shorthanded time that you had and shots against on the ice for the team, which I'd distribute among all the players. And for goaltenders, it was just basically based on save percentage or saves, goals against and saves versus what a replacement level goaltender could be expected to do.
Tom, I really appreciate how you're able to break things down for a beginner / intermediate like myself. I really appreciate it. Continued success. And what's your, and I know you're kind of semi-retired, but is there something that you want to have in the next book for Hockey Abstract, some new angle that will get people maybe thinking outside the box again?
I think a lot of the where we are at now in hockey analytics, a lot of it is dependent on the quality of data that we can get access to. You know, the current revolution analytics started in about 2007, 2008, when the NHL started publishing detailed game-by-game reports, and we could start seeing which player was on the ice for every shot, which player was on the ice for every event. And I think we've kind of squeezed whatever juice we can out of that. The next step now is figuring out, you know, where is every player on the ice? Things like zone entries, teams carrying the puck, again, location of shots on net, things like that. I think at this point we'll need better data before we can really have another quantum leap in the quality of analytics that we can get.
Tom, thank you so much for this. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Jason.